afternoon and welcome to Your Life, Your Health, sponsored by Central Neighborhood Health Foundation. CNHF provides quality patient-centered healthcare for underserved multi-ethnic communities in Los Angeles, San Bernardino, and Riverside counties. Central Neighborhood Health Foundation is a full-service Medicare-certified healthcare provider with access points in Los Angeles and San Bernardino counties. Founded in 1967, our guiding principle for nearly five decades has been the efficient and effective delivery of culturally competent care to our patient community. And without further ado, and you know how we do it right here on the Intentional Talk Radio Network, it is time for your host, Dr. George Bell, the Outreach Director at the Central Neighborhood Health Foundation, who will facilitate the updates and introduce today's guests and also hot topics for today. Dr. Bell, take it away.
Thank you, Yolanda. Ladies and gentlemen, we're living in rapidly changing times. The principle of acceleration is in full effect. Fear spreads in cabal as Taliban take charge. Wow, just a never-ending story. The day after the Afghan president fled and the Taliban installed themselves in the presidential palace, there's uncertainty throughout the region. Biden stands by his decision to pull U.S. troops out of Afghanistan. Nations expect an outpouring of refugees as the Afghan crisis is now escalating. European leaders hope to deflect an expected wave of Afghan immigrants. Just yesterday, while listening to the local news, there was one advocate for the Afghani people stating that they're expecting at least six families to arrive in Orange County, the Irvine area, and they're seeking refuge. I'm here to tell you this has triggered a horrific situation in that region, and now it's impacting the world. Again, leaders all around the world, they're looking at this possibility of immigrants flooding their borders. Not only that, the monetary cost of having U.S. military forces in Afghanistan, it's estimated to have been more than $2 trillion. The long-term cost of health care and disability benefits for veterans who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan is estimated to be between $1.6 trillion and $1.8 trillion. You know, I wonder, as we look at this situation unfolding, it's kind of reminiscent of Vietnam. That's what they've been saying. We occupied for almost 20 years there, and 58,000 forces were lost. So here it is at the end of another so-called victory. We're seeing the same kind of fallout. Not only that, there's conflicting messages between Biden and his press secretary, Jen Psaki. Press secretary Jen Psaki insults those brave men and women by saying, "We're not going to have a mission accomplished." The moment they hear that, after spending many years in a combat zone, this moment in returning back to America, military personnel, after being deployed for our country, it's a 20-year war that has not been won militarily. Those are the words of your press secretary from the White House. But that seems to be a total contradiction from what Biden said in his speech explaining withdrawing the U.S. military troops from Afghanistan. Quote, "We went to war with clear goals. We achieved those objectives," Biden said. Bin Laden is dead, and the Taliban is degraded in Afghanistan. The original purpose of sending American military forces to degrade the terrorist threat from the Taliban and to bring Osama bin Laden to justice for the September 11th, 2001 terror attacks, which killed more than 3,000 Americans. That's the rationale, to prevent that kind of activity, terrorist activity, from coming to U.S. borders. So the rationalization among military brass and the media, it's simply troops were sent to Afghanistan to prevent the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and the like from bringing lawless activity to the United States of America. Well, that's what they say. There's much to be said in the wake of this as the days continue to roll by. We'll see what the rationalizations are, what the justifications are as this continues to play out. This is a time for God-fearing people to be on their knees praying that some sanity will reign in Washington, D.C. The Bible says that when the righteous bear rule, the people rejoice. But when the wicked are in office, the people mourn. This is a very mournful time for our country. And of course, as believers, we can push prayers up that blessings come down. So with all that said, let's move on. And I didn't hear anything from Yolanda on this subject, but that's okay. We're going to press forward.
That's because I have nothing to say. I think you're absolutely right. And I watched it this afternoon, and all of those people, they even showed somebody falling off of that plane, that airship. And did you see all of those people that were running by that airship? I mean, really? This is really going to be crazy. And quite frankly, I think somebody just doesn't know what to do. I think they're at a point where they just don't know what to do. That's what it looks like to me. I could be wrong. I'm not there sitting in the White House.
Well, you know, it was a sad thing to see. It was reported yesterday that I think at least 7 people died as a result of trying to grab onto a plane, hold on to escape the pending doom and the terror that lies ahead for them. It's just unbelievable. I can't imagine living in that kind of fear and horror. Yeah. And so there was some relief with the United States troops being there, but now
they're pulling
back
out.
They're back in the throes of that Taliban. And those just insensitive, inhumane doctrines of the Taliban, the Sharia law. So we know that we're in for quite a struggle. So again, let's be prayerful for the Afghani people and the forces that remain behind to try to keep some sense of order there. Well, let's move on to our guests. And today our topic is health equity, and health equity, that everyone has a fair and just opportunity to be as healthy as possible. And that's what our talk is going to be about today. We're going to talk to our guest, Art Freeman, and we have an unbelievable testimony of triumph over tragedy. Art Freeman, of course, is a husband, a father, with a long-lasting career in the financial and insurance industry since 1978. Art is a leader in account management, expertise in all phases of loan origination, loss mitigation, and short sale negotiation, property preservation, And the list goes on and on and on. And so I am grateful to have Arth with us today. And we're going to talk about, again, this astounding story of triumph over tragedy. And again, I would imagine in Art's line of work, it sounds like it's a very fast-paced environment. But we know just over a year ago that fast pace was slowed down due to a health crisis of his daughter, Marissa. Welcome, Art. How are you?
I do well, George. Thank you very much.
Well, it's good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
And we want to get this story out and share with others some of the things that occurred during this very, it's a tragedy, but at the same time, I see a silver lining. The Lord is good. God is good. And he's a keeper, and that's what I see in this. So I want you to share a little bit about who Marissa, your daughter, is and what happened to her. How long ago was it exactly?
It was September 26th of 2018. My daughter, Marissa, is my youngest daughter, and I have six children, and she's my youngest of the six. She was in college, and she was taking a jogging class, mandatory class for a major, which was nutrition. She was majoring in nutrition and psychology. During the course of her run, she suffered heat stroke.
Wow. So what were some of the conditions that led up to this this devastating heat stroke?
It's one of those things that you don't really, the more that we got into this and the more that we inquired it's something you hear about, but you don't really think about it. It just seems so far-fetched. It's not a mainstream type of injury or condition that people talk about. And we found out firsthand how much ignorance there is about heat stroke. That's the thing that we discovered.
You know, just yesterday I was talking to Tilly, who's our communications and marketing manager at the clinic, and she was saying some time back she actually experienced heat stroke. Of course, it wasn't as devastating as what happened to Marissa. So it seems like there are different levels of heat stroke. Are you aware of that?
Yes, there are. Marissa's heat stroke was very, very severe, as you just mentioned. It was to the point where she actually suffered cardiac arrest. She was taken from the school where she was jogging to an emergency hospital nearby in San Bernardino. And she was resuscitated through, they gave her a shot of Epi. By the time that I found out about it and made my way up there, they had already resuscitated her. But when I saw her, no parent is ready to see that scene where you have your child laid out looking like they're gone, packed in ice, every tube and machine imaginable hooked up to her, nothing looking good, nobody giving us any hope. It was very, very devastating, very devastating.
So, you know, that kind of reminds me, they say everybody of age, when JFK was assassinated, they knew exactly what they were doing and where they were. Is that frozen in your mind
always
when this happened? So what always. Was actually, what was happening that day? Where were you when you learned about it?
I had just come home from work. My day is, my days back then were long, very long days. I got up at 3 something in the morning, like about 3:10 in the morning. I had to make my way to about 20 miles to an express bus station. Actually had a train station to catch that into Orange County. And if anybody knows about that, you know how crazy of a commute that is. And, you know, you get off. I got off at 3 and it took me about another, it took me two and a half hours to get to work. It took me about another 2.5-3 hours to get home every day. So I'd just gotten home. Just was preparing myself for the evening, and I knew my Marissa was at school. Both my daughters were going to the same college. And then I got a phone call from my other daughter saying she didn't know where Marissa was and wanted to know if we heard from her, and she was looking for her. And just to cut to the chase here, my daughter finally found out. She saw an ambulance there where Marissa where Marissa's class, jogging class, usually meets. Well, I can't say usually meets, but that's where they do meet. She didn't realize it, but then she found out that later that that ambulance had taken Marissa to the emergency room. She didn't realize that till afterwards. So she called after that and let me know. And as soon as that happened, of course, I got in the car and was on my way to where she was.
Yeah, I can imagine that was shocking. And here it is, your other daughter, you know, experiencing that shock. You know, the Lord gives us what we call God's anesthetic. If we didn't have shock, it would be overwhelming to witness something like that, especially a family member, a loved one. And so, you know, I'm grateful for God's anesthetic. He has a way of keeping us in the midst of such tragedy. And so I know it impacted the family. I know it was a ripple effect. So if we were to go through each family member, if you can remember what it was like, what was their reaction, not yours, but perhaps their reaction when they saw her, not just the daughter that found out about it, but how did this ripple through your family?
We were all devastated. We were all in a state of shock. As you said, we were in shock, didn't know what to think. I think I asked a bunch of stupid questions to the medical staff because my brain wasn't kicking into gear. I did ask, I remember asking somebody who I thought was an ER doctor, what was her prognosis for recovery, what's going on, trying to get any type of answers. They tried to give me the best answers they could give me, but you could tell they really didn't know. We were in severe shock and severe pain. Even now.
Of course. Even though she's come a long way, I know that pain is still there.
The pain that was there, even just talking about it, it just brings it back. But I want to say this. God is good. When we were in that ER, strangers that saw, we must have really looked like we're in pain because strangers that just came up to us and wanted to pray for us. They didn't know us. They didn't know us from Adam. They had no idea who we were. They saw myself and my wife standing there in shock. And of course, two of my other kids came out from L.A. They drove all the way out from L.A. to San Bernardino when we told them. And then they were there with us sharing in this. We were all in shock, all in pain. But strangers, Christians, came up to us praying for us. And we received it, and we were thankful to God that they were, and we noted that. We had enough sense and enough consciousness to note that these people were praying for us, and that it was very, 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 how can I say, strengthening at the moment. Yes, gave us some hope.
Yes. Thank God. Lord has his people everywhere.
Yes, he does, and the Lord knows how to reach you where you are.
Yes. As a matter of fact, Central Neighborhood Health Foundation, our founder, he attended Loma Linda University, and at Loma Linda, the leadership there, they believed that they were deploying what they call medical evangelists into the communities. So, you know, the doctors, the providers, the physicians, they're in service to mankind. And, of course, many of them, they place science over God, the divine. But healing ultimately comes from the Almighty. But we thank God for the physicians being instruments and tools of God.
Oh, yeah, thank God. Thank God for them, because they kept Marissa alive. They brought her back from death with God's guidance. God gave man the knowledge and the ability to do these things. So we take it that way, that God gave knowledge to men on how to save lives. But of course, we know God is ultimately in control of it all. But he did give us that.
Yes.
The thing that I noticed in Marissa's situation there is that none of the doctors wanted to give us any hope. The nurses, on the other hand, gave us much hope and gave us much reassurance. So we learned that very quickly through all of the different facilities and hospitals. The second hospital that you went to, and the different care facilities that she stayed at through her recovery process.
Yeah, so they really didn't know how to treat her at the time. Of course, you're all in suspense, wondering. And so thank God for those nurses.
Yeah, even at the point of injury, nobody knew what to do. Nobody understood, or nobody realized at the point of injury where it was most critical, nobody knew what to do. And they were doing a few things and they may have helped, but had they known what to do, it may not have turned out the way that it did. But thank God for the direction that God took us in. And allowed Marissa to recover, and he. There was so much prayer. I can say this: that the initial shock of being in there in the ER, and hearing the doctors tell you what they thought Marissa's, all of her organs were failing. I can't remember the exact numbers, but they were all off the chart. I think some liver enzyme count was like over 5,000, and it's supposed to be like 300 or something like that. And the same thing with her kidneys. They were like way off the charts. Everything was failing. And they were just trying to scan to see if she even had brain waves. It was that severe. She was non-responsive. Her eyes were rolled back in her head. They packed her in ice. Her core temperature was over 104. And it sustained over 104. They were doing everything. They were pulling out every prick, every, you know, thing they could think of to save her life and to keep her going. Like I said, thank God for the ER doctors, nurses, and everybody that treated her there. Then we got to the point where we started to learn about healthcare coverage and insurance. So, of course, our primary medical plan was with a different hospital than the one we were at, and they required that Marissa be transferred after 4 days or else they weren't going to pay for her hospital stay. So regardless of the condition that she was in, almost, it seemed that way. But the doctors did stabilize her to a point, but then they transported her from one place to another. It seemed like her condition got worse when they transferred her. She ended up at another place. And again, we had the nurses doing what they do, the doctors doing what they do. Nobody gave us hope. The doctors at the new place really didn't give us any hope. One doctor told me that her quality of life, we had to think about that and to just pull the plug. So this is what to send her someplace, and they know how to, you know, manage somebody when they're dying, basically. And when you come in, you come into the ER, when you see the nurses huddling in the corner and looking at you, you know something's not right. You know that nobody's giving you any hope. But I can say this about my family. We're strong in the Lord as much as we can be. We're as strong as we can be. I found myself, my wife also, being overwhelmed. And I think that's when the pain caught up with us at the second hospital, and the pain was unbearable.
So we go from the emergency room. Now there's another hospital, an ICU. Is that she yes. was in ICU?
ICU, yes.
Okay. And so you're experiencing that. I know there's high emotions with the family. And now here's the key, though. High emotions, not really receiving much information about her condition. I'm sure that that drove you to pray like you've never prayed before.
We were praying from the very start, George. We prayed from the start, but when we got there, the tone of the conversation changed to very negative about her prospects of living. So, yes, at that point, we prayed like never before. And I just remember, just to be honest, I was so angry at God at that point, because I was saying, didn't I just pray this morning that you would protect her on her way to school, on the way home, protect my family, keep them safe? And I was like, what's the point of even praying? This has happened. And I just remember being so angry at God for about a day or so, maybe a day and a half or two. And then God put the story of Job on my mind. As soon as I locked into that anger, God put that on my mind. And I said, I'm a fool, because I don't have one millimeter of righteousness compared to what Job had, you know, outside of what, of course, Christ is the ultimate righteousness. But me, I make so many mistakes. Job was, of course, everybody knows the story. That's the Christian. And the Lord showed me that I don't know what his purpose is. His purpose is way beyond what I can imagine. I don't know. And I said, Lord, I'm a fool, because I know that we're here on this earth for a temporary short time. My family, you've shown me, Lord, that my family is not special above every family in the earth, that we wouldn't get touched by tragedy. We're in this world like everybody else. Tragedy touches everyone. And I had to realize that, and I had to come to terms with it. And I had to come to terms, and this was the hard part. I had to be okay with God if he took Marissa from us, or if he allowed her to recover. And when I came to peace with that, that's when things started to change. And the Lord gave us some people around us and some information. I remember that we had I remember I have a friend that's into holistic stuff, and we were sneaking in some holistic things because they weren't doing anything for Marissa. I remember giving her frankincense and myrrh and scalar silver because she had gotten a hospital bug that they had no medicine. It was resistant to all their antibiotics, and they were just trying to let it run its course. And me as a dad, I said, no, it's not. I'm doing something. And, you know, so we just went on and we did that. When we started doing that stuff, I asked the Lord if he could, like we said before, the Lord can meet us where we are. And I asked the Lord to please meet us where we are. I said, I don't know if my faith can stretch from where I am with all this pain up to where you are without something in between where I can touch it. And that happened to be those different oils, the frankincense and myrrh and the scalar silver. So I'm not here to say these are miracle cures, and I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, everybody run out and do this. I'm not going to say that. I will say that God met us there with our faith. And at that point, Marissa started to recover slowly but surely.
So now we're talking about traditional medicine versus alternative medicine. And you saw a tremendous impact. Now, for the listening audience, you just mentioned two treatments that I'm sure people have heard about, myrrh and those are biblical.
Yes, they are very much so.
But I don't think people understand it. Can you just elaborate just a little bit more on the frankincense and myrrh?
Sure. When you look it up online, if you take frankincense and myrrh internally, you have to be very careful, number one. But if you take it internally, it goes right to the central nervous system and strengthens the central nervous system and preserves it. And that's where Marissa's battle was, because she had an anoxic brain injury, meaning that her brain was deprived of oxygen for a very long time. And everything was deteriorating. One of the doctors, the one that gave me no hope, showed me a picture of Marissa's thalamus, which is the part of the brain that's in the right in the middle where your personality is stored, your sight, your speech, all that stuff is like right in the thalamus. And if that dies, I mean, then you're just pretty much brain dead. And he showed me a picture of it, and it was all white. The MRI showed just nothing but white.
Yeah, no activity.
Well, it was showing that those brain cells were dead on the surface anyway. And so I kept asking questions, and I didn't stop asking questions. So that was like a kick in the gut when he told me that. I couldn't stand there with the pain that resulted from that, from what he told me afterwards and what he was showing me. I had to leave. But when I did leave, I didn't give up. I went and did some research. I have a sister that's a nurse at a hospital, and I asked her to please just research, tell me if an MRI, does it show the surface or does it show underneath the surface? Is it showing me through and through, or is it just showing me something on the surface? Because if it's just the surface covered in white, okay, then the surface cells died, but what's underneath could still be alive and healthy. So she told me, hey, it just shows the surface. And then I put some questions together and I came back to the hospital. And that's the thing that I discovered that you have to do. You have to be there every day, which we were, and you have to ask questions, and you can't give up and just let people tell you that this is what it is and that's what it is without doing your own research and coming back and say, well, what about this and what about that? So I came back and had a meeting with the head of nursing, the social worker, the caseworker, and the doctor in charge of Marissa's case. And I sat down with all four of them in a room, and I went through my list. I said, why are you telling me that this is happening when with her thalamus, when it's clearly a case of the surface is only being shown? What are you trying to tell me? This is through and through. And we went through all kinds of stuff, and basically they just got mad at me, you know, because they didn't, they couldn't give me straight answers. And then after that, I just told them what I wanted. And I told them, number one, the people, especially the doctor that didn't give her any hope, you know, because he was talking right in front of Marissa. And my belief was that Marissa could hear us. And even though she may not have, you know, catching up with everything, but she could hear us. And I told him, don't talk to her in front of her anymore. I don't want him talking to her. I said, if that's the only neurologist you have, let him come in and do his job, and then let him leave. Because they would come in while Marissa was drugged up, no sleep, because they punch and poke and move her every hour, and she's not getting any sleep, and full of medications and stuff to make her drowsy. And then they want to snap their fingers and say, Marissa, can you hear me? Move your eyes this way. You know, do this and do that. How is she going to do that? You know? So these are the things that I brought to their attention. And I said, now when we come in and meet with Marissa, we're starting to see these actions. But like I said, doctors were trying to tell us, especially the one doctor trying to tell us, those are just involuntary motions. We hear any noises, it's just grunt animal type of instincts because she's gone. And I'm saying, no, she's not. And we went through that for a while. And then finally, one doctor, I told him to come in on a Sunday when we're there early and see what we see. And the doctor came in and saw what we saw. And he says, I see what you're seeing now. I said, and he's changed the course of Marissa's treatment and put her on a path to recovery. It's by that time, she had a trach and everything else and a breathing machine. So they started sitting her up. They started doing things for her to recover. It made a big difference. Big difference.
Yeah, I hear advocacy over a passive approach. What people need to know is that we have to fight for our loved ones when they go into a hospital.
And you have to show up every day. Show up. We did yes. Every day we were there. Absolutely. Every day.
Absolutely.
Not one day that we left off. Not one.
That's right.
Yes. There's a member.
We would sleep for an hour or two, and then we'd be right back. I'd go to work, come home, and sometimes I wouldn't even come home. I'd just go straight to where she is, and we'd be there all night until they kick us out, or one of us just falls asleep, and we get up and go home, and another one comes. We're all there. Even my two children that are here with us that were there, they showed up. Everybody was there. So there was these three or four of us there in the room always.
So what would you say to people that are listening? They have a family member that's in the throes of a crisis, a medical crisis. And of course you have the medical experts. They're going to give their opinion. But yet you're there, you're seeing signs of hope. But the doctors are not seeing the same thing, because maybe their sciences can only go so far. So what would you say to people? I mean, you just said it, but I think we really need to emphasize that, because Central Neighborhood Health Foundation, our clinics are in underserved areas. And so the public that frequents the clinics, they're at the mercy of the doctors. And of course, there are many people that are going to be upset, but, you know, with the persuasion of a physician, they're easily silenced, because the providers, they're going to portray themselves as the experts and that the public knows nothing. So I hear a passion behind what you're saying. And again, what I see is advocacy. You were standing up and speaking up. Because that's our right, and we can challenge, we can ask questions, we can look at the numbers from tests. We need to know all So is there anything else you would say to the public
in that regard? I would say all of those things. I would say that you have to do your own research. If there's a particular injury, a particular disease, a particular reason why a person's in the hospital, you have to do your own research on that as much as you can. Of course, you're not going to be a doctor, but you can ask questions of other places that are not related. You can go on the internet. I mean, I was fortunate enough to have a friend that's a naturopath doctor. So I was able to get some keen insight there. And I was fortunate enough also to have, to have a sister sister and a sister-in-law that are nurses. But you don't have to have that resource to go online, because I found the information about frankincense and myrrh online, what it actually did. Of course, my friend brought it up to me, you know, that's what he wanted to give us to help her. The other thing was that being there makes a huge difference. When they see you, that the family or the loved ones are there, and you're always there, and you're asking questions. My wife would come in there and see that they were that as soon as Marissa would move. Well, let's put it this way: they have her on the automatic blood pressure device. And it would go off and start taking her blood pressure, and Marissa would react to it, you know, in her condition, and start struggling against it because she doesn't know what's going on with her arm. She just knows that, hey, something's happening here, and she's not feeling comfortable. And she starts moving, and her blood pressure shoots up, and immediately the nurses rush in and start, you know, doping her up with this and that and drugging her out. And my wife correctly called him on that, said, why do you keep doing that when you see that, you know, she's, you know, that she's reacting to the blood pressure device. It's not that she's having high blood pressure. It's that the device is making her uncomfortable and she's struggling. It said, stop trying to manage numbers and manage the patient. You know the patient. Just don't come in and start managing numbers. And that's the other thing. Nurses and caregivers are people too. And I'm sure all of us have the experience. You go into work and you just get on automatic mode and you see this, so you do that, and you see that, and you do this. And, you know, these things have to be shuffled this way and put over here and done that way and calculated like this, rather than looking at the client or the customer or whatever that you're working with and saying, what is it that they need? And let me stop looking at numbers. Let me stop looking at trends and charts. Let me look at this person in the eye, so to speak, quote unquote, and find out what their need is. And then you can move from there in order to actually treat the situation. So when that was brought up, of course, they changed their course of action and Marissa was doing better. Not so much medicine in her.
Wow. I think George has frozen.
No, he froze.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I think you're, no, he's not. There he is.
I'm still here. Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted to comment.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to bring up real quick as far as, and I'm sorry, but I wanted to make sure I got this in, that at that point, they started trying to get Marissa out of the ER because it cost them money. I heard what you were saying about your clinics are in hard hit areas where there's no medical facilities, no limited medical capabilities for people in the neighborhoods. But what people also have to realize is that even if you have medical insurance, quote unquote, and I always say medical insurance is like an oxymoron, but the thing is that you're buying a certain corridor of coverage. If you go beyond that corridor of coverage, then they don't want to get, you're going to find a lot of resistance. If you're paying for, I'm just saying this, if you're paying for $5 coverage, just using that as an arbitrary number. And but you need $10 treatment, you're going to have a hard time trying to get that $10 treatment, even if it's going to save your life. So we were running into that constantly. And then the other thing is that we ran into is that it seemed like it was a money thing, because they were trying to get Marissa out of the ICU and get her over into some care, long-term care facility, even to the point where they didn't even give us the opportunity on one time to say where we wanted her to go to. They just called us, or the facility called us, and it was like miles and miles away, and many miles away, like almost 100 miles away. And they were going to ship her over there. So how are we going to see her? You know, who said that we want her released over there? So I had to again jump in and say, no, we're not doing that. So where are your facilities that you do release to? What care facilities are around here? Let's check those out. I went around to each one of those facilities to check them out. I went to each one. And she needed a special facility that handles trachs. I went to each one of their trach facilities. She didn't get into the one that I wanted her to get into because they didn't have any beds available. So the one that she went to, it was okay. They did a great job, though, in getting her off the trach and weaning her off of that and moving her on to the next care facility that handles people without trachs. So, but you have to jump in there, and you can't just be, like you said, you can't just let them tell you what to do. You have to direct them to the point where you make people mad. And those people were mad at me. I didn't care.
Wow. So
got to the point where the regional case manager was put in charge of Marissa's case, the one that handled everybody in the Inland Empire. They just didn't give it to a case manager because I kept pushing it. And they, so I'm just letting you know, these things are possible. We kept praying and kept pushing.
Let's look at her journey. We know she was released. She came home. And how is she doing now? Is there any improvement?
From where Marissa was on that day of her injury to where she is now, it's like light and day. Where she was unresponsive and every organ failing, Marissa is now taking steps with the aid of some care, with a therapist. She walked across the family room last Friday with the walker and the aid of the therapist, and of course, when I see it, I'm so happy. But then, of course, when I see it, I'm very sad as well, because I remember Marissa before the injury. But I'm glad, and I'm glad to see her recovery. I'm very, very happy. She's eating and drinking more normally. She was on a feeding tube for such a long time, for about 9 months. I think 9 months on the feeding tube. Before they took it out, that type of stuff. Now she's eating just about anything she wants to eat.
Yeah, well, it caused me to think about how you would share with me how you're doing the drive-through at these convenience foods restaurants.
Yes, and Marissa. Well, we call her Queen Marissa now because she gives orders and we jump. So when it's time for her, when she wants something to eat, everybody scrambles to find, to make it happen. But, she is wheelchair bound right now, which is way better than being bed bound and way better than being limited in her motions. She can do many things. She's learning to write again. She can write. She's using a tablet. She's getting therapy on her speech, occupational therapy, physical therapy, recreational therapy. And these things are happening because, like I said, we didn't stay still. We pushed and pushed and pushed. We prayed and prayed, and we trusted God. And like I said, I'm not a millimeter as righteous as Job was, but this is God's will. This is what he wanted to have happen for Marissa. And we're thankful for it, because it could have went a different way altogether.
Of course. So she's receiving care at home, therapies, and a regimen?
Yeah. Yeah, she's getting all of that. So she's got, you know, she's got some caregivers, and she's got that therapy coming in. And so Marissa is in a much, much better place. And the people around her are positive and can-do people. You can do it. And not anything negative.
Yeah. So it does make a difference when, in this case, the parents, the family, everybody engaged. And yes. No one was a spectator.
Yes. One thing I did pray, and I want everybody to know this, I prayed for favor with man. And I pray for favor with man for Marissa. I know that, I ask for favor with God, but I ask the Lord to send people around her that would appreciate her and that would love her like we love her, for favor. And wherever, I can say this, wherever Marissa was, she was a rock star. Even in the ER, the ER nurses, were saying there was something about Marissa. They just felt something about her. When she got to the ICU, we're praying and everything. There was one nurse, there were many nurses, all of them were coming in and just giving Marissa, washing her hair, doing all kinds of stuff, giving her, you know, giving her things. One nurse kept in touch with, she keeps in touch with us now today. From 2.5 years ago. It'll be 3 years this coming September. And we just spoke to her, about a week ago? So, and each facility that she was at, in the, one of the longest care facilities that she was at, people still remember her there. We ran across a doctor, I think my wife ran across a doctor that was treating Marissa. I think she said it was a doctor or a nurse. I can't remember. But she was shocked to see video of Marissa, because she said they didn't give Marissa any hope. But she had so many people. At one facility, they were asked, one nurse just asked my wife, she said, "Who are you guys?" Mm-hmm. "Who are you?" Because we showed up every day. We didn't give up on Marissa. We had nothing but positive things. I would go in to the care facility. I would break open the word. I would read the word, and to the point where the people around her were, you know, wanting to hear the word being read. You know, those types of things, that's what you got to do. You got to pull all the plugs out. It's all hands on deck. Emergency. Don't. Power, don't fall back and shrink. You have to stand up and you have to go for it and give it everything you got.
So one last question before we go. Our time is far spent. How has this impacted your family and your faith in God?
Well, that's a pretty big question. Let me start with family first. I can say this, that where my kids used to bicker over little stuff, like somebody left this out, I don't want to clean that, why do I have to do this, why do I have to do that, it's completely opposite. I am so proud of my kids, all of them, but especially the ones that are here in the house with me, that they're still in college. One's getting her master's degree soon. My youngest son she's getting a master's. Marissa's sister's getting a master's in psychology, marriage and family counseling. My youngest son is about to graduate with his BA in computer science and moving on into his master's program. Through all of that, they get up every day. They wash dishes. They scrub floors. My daughter takes care of Marissa. Like, she takes over nursing. She washes her up. She does everything. Her hair, her bed, everything. It's just complete maturity, and everybody just pulled together. Everybody, the love that's poured out towards Marissa is just unbelievable, and our family is stronger as a result of this experience. Our faith in God, my faith in God wasn't going to go anywhere. I remember the story in the Word where Jesus had given a very difficult saying to the people that he was preaching to, saying, "You eat my flesh and drink my blood, or you have no part of me." And people started running away, and he asked the disciples, "Are you going to go too?" And they said, "Well, where are we going to go to? You're the one that has the words of life." And so that's the way that for me personally, like I said, I had to settle it either way. If Marissa went with God, was I going to be mad and angry, or I'm going to say I'm a fool? Because we all end up with God one day, one way or another. And like I said, there's many families that have lost children, lost loved ones. And my family's not any special more than any other family in the world. It's God's will and what his purpose is that matters. So those are the big lessons for me out of this. I would have to ask my family members individually what their meaning is or what the meaning they got out of this. But for me, it just rooted me that way, understanding that God's in control of everything. And God asks a question, and the question isn't for him to learn something. It's for me to learn something. He already knows. So he asked a question, and I found the answer in me because of the situation that I had to go through.
Well, thank you, Art. I really appreciate your time and your sharing today. We look forward to an update in the report. Thank you. Absolutely. Once again. Yolanda?
Art, thank you very much for your information, for the story about your daughter, Marissa. And we pray for her. We pray for her recovery, and she's doing well. Your strength, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, you can't leave anybody in the hospital. You cannot leave them to do what they do. You must be there and you must fight. So God bless you. God bless you. You've been listening to Your Life, Your Health, sponsored by Central Neighborhood Health Foundation, with main offices located at 714 West Olympic Boulevard, Suite 801 in Los Angeles at 90015. For additional information, visit our website at cnhfclinics.org or info@cnhfclinics.org. Also visit our social media sites at Central Neighborhood Health Foundation at facebook.com and also Central Neighborhood Health Foundation at cnhf_clinics at Instagram. And don't forget, folks, COVID-19 testing is still going on at the Central Clinic Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. Inglewood Clinic Monday through Thursday at 10 a.m. to 11. And don't forget the food pantry on the first and third Mondays of each month. And also, don't forget COVID-19 vaccinations are being given also. The food pantry is at 10:30 a.m. located at Grand Avenue in Central, I'm sorry, in South Los Angeles at 2614 South Grand Avenue, LA 90007. And you have been listening to Your Life, Your Health with Dr. George Bell and his guest. Have a good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. It is now time for